Lauren, you are speaking to me across the airwaves all the way from Portugal.
Was I from Portugal on our last episode? I don't think so. I was on the Patreon.
And let's just make something clear for the listeners. People are going to say, well, how do you record when she's in Portugal? How does this happen?
How are you possibly going to keep your podcast going? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Well, the jig's up, baby. We never record in person. We are always recording remotely. And actually, whether I'm in Puerto Rico or Portugal, it's been fairly seamless.
Yeah, truly. It has been seamless. They do have Wi-Fi there.
They do. I just basically – Chandler's the one with the tough schedule, actually. So the question should be, how do you record when Chandler has a full-time job and, like, so much on her plate? That's the real question.
Oh, thank you so much for acknowledging that there's so much on my plate. Those words were so validating to hear. If you could please wax poetic about how much I have going on and everything I'm juggling, that would be really good for me.
Well, I'm going to bring back to myself and say that the answer is that I just still work around – Chandler's schedule, no matter where I am on the globe.
She's still my full-time emotional manager.
It's true.
In addition to running this podcast, mm-hmm. In addition to running her other business. It's amazing. Did you put emotional manager on your LinkedIn?
It's actually in my bio, yeah. Okay, it says Chancuterie's emotional manager and CEO. No, I think it says co-founder.
Chief emotional manager? Officer?
Oh, there we go.
Officer? CEO?
There we go.
Wow.
There we
go. Did I just coin something?
Potentially your first coined phrase ever. Congratulations.
Potentially. Wow. Thank you.
Chan, how's it going?
I don't even care about anything I'm about to say. I want to hear about Portugal. I've been trying to ask you about it. In fact, you've sent me some passive-aggressive texts about how we don't talk anymore. But really, it's just that you've been in Portugal and you've been saving telling me all about it until the podcast.
That's true.
So that was not fair.
Well, anyway, Chandler's very busy, you guys, and she's semi-impossible to get a hold of and always has to go. Whenever on the phone, she always has to go. But anyway, it's okay. That's just the reality. She's a busy gal.
I'm going to write a book on playing hard to get with my own family and what it's done for me.
It's working. Let me tell you. Like, honestly, when I can hear your voice falter, I know when you're about to say you have to go. I just know. It's like 7 minutes and 30 seconds into a call. If like we have even one sentence that lulls and that is like just doesn't completely go to the next topic, it's like, oh, well, okay, sis, I actually have to run. Anyway.
I'm sorry. Can we just talk about Portugal though?
Yeah. Well, can I tell you about my journey getting here?
Yes. Yes, please.
Okay. So Chandler and I talked about it on the Patreon, but Kagan and I got some business class tickets at a hell of a deal to come to Portugal. So I was extremely excited because I personally am only used to transatlantic flights that are just utterly hellish experiences.
Yeah. The type of flights where you're like, I'll never fly again.
Yes, your body feels like it's breaking. You check the clock every 20 minutes. Like, it's just a horrendous human experience. I mean, especially since I never even flew with any sort of Xanax or medication and to get through it ever until like 2 years ago.
Until your addiction began.
Kagan introduced the power of flying with a tiny bit of Xanax on our flight home from China in 2018, and that was life-changing for sure.
Yeah.
So Xanax is poor man's business class, and then if you can get into biz class, it was my first time. Who knows if I'll ever fly again. So of course, I need to regale our listeners with this luxurious experience. And if you're the type of person that's like, bitch, I fly private. I cannot believe you're even going to wax poetic about this. Or you fly business class all the time. Let's be friends because I want to get on your level. Okay. But for our listeners who are used to the econo
33F.
Life, yeah. I just have to regale you with this experience because it's probably the first and last I'll ever have. So Kagan and I scored a massive deal on these flights. And it was through a website called wholesale-flights.com. And you basically can just like get business class seats at a much lower price than they usually sell them for. So anyway, we got a good deal. And I was very excited about this. Kagan loves upgrades and luxury experiences. He also likes getting a deal. And I really enjoy being the person who both gets the deal and watches him enjoy the experience.
What is the deal? Like, is it like 10% off? Like, is it a true deal?
These flights were, I mean, since we're just like gross Americans, that's what I'm learning while I'm in Europe, is what a gross American I am. But since we're gross Americans, let's just chat money for a second.
Let's talk numbers.
Let's talk some good old-fashioned cash. So these flights were originally $6,000 each, and we got them for $1,500 each.
What?
And I know. Pretty phenomenal.
That's crazy. And that's
just one way. So it's like three grand round trip if we end up doing round trip. But it's still pretty phenomenal. Yeah, you're not getting a $750 round trip flight. That's not in the cards. But it's still not a $12,000 round trip flight as it is if you tried to book otherwise.
If you're going to pay for luxury, and if you're a person who's going to feel it at all, this is the way to do it.
It's absolutely correct. This is the way to do it. So first of all, we get up to the gate, or not to the gate, to the ticket counter when we first get to the airport, and the lady is just like a total bitch. I'm sorry, but she is just so rude to us. She's just aggressive.
Like what? What airport are you at?
We're at LAX. What was she saying? She was just like, there was some issue about, what was it? Oh, we didn't have, like, Portugal has some pass that you need to sign up for before you get there. That's like traveler information pass. So they basically know who you are.
Uh-huh.
And she needs a QR. She said I needed the QR code. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of like scolded us for not having those, you know, on the ready. And so she was just like kind of curt and rude. Additionally, this was so funny. We get to the airport and like it's packed. There's so many people in line. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this would be incredible. We're just going to flitter up to the, you know, the business class, first class, you know, line. But then we go to the Air France section and there's just there's no one there. So there was like there was no benefit to flying business.
There's no dedicated line.
Well, there was, but both lines were empty. So,
oh, that's funny.
It wasn't like it was actually one of those times where I'm like, damn it, I wish more people were in line so I could just, you know,
float on by.
Exactly. So anyway, she's just kind of curt, and it was so funny. Kagan was like, if I was paying $6,000 for these seats, I would have been furious. And I was like, well, you're not. So relax. And then we get to security, and security moves at a snail's pace.
And you don't have pre-check.
No, we don't have pre-check. Ugh. I need to get global entry on our way home.
You guys both need to get pre-check. It is honestly, I'll talk about it after this.
Yeah, no, we're planning on getting it, but we don't have it right now. So anyway, it's just an utter nightmare. Like, security is a big nightmare. It's also made more of a nightmare because I brought ankle weights with me, which I guess just look like bombs.
What good reason, Lauren? Like, you have a history of bringing items on transatlantic flights that do not need to be there, like a juicer, lest we forget. Why the hell did you bring ankle weights?
Because this is my justification. I need to work out while I'm here. We're here for 6 weeks to 2 months potentially, and my wedding is in February. I need to be like fit and toned and tight at my wedding. And if I lose 2 months of working out in between now and February, I feel like I will lose some ground.
And there's no possible way to buy weights in Portugal? Nobody works out in Portugal?
I should have just brought bands. Like, why couldn't I just bring exercise like bands? Why did I have
You're
to
an idiot.
Bring the weights? I also brought a 12-pound dumbbell.
No. You literally just ate up 12 pounds of cute clothes space to bring one dumbbell, like, because as if Portugal doesn't have like any sort of like exercise culture or like workout retail stores.
Well, the hilarious thing is there's a full gym in our hotel.
I feel like I should have spoken to you before you left.
I know. I'm an idiot in this so many ways.
Also, if I had been more available, I would have talked you out of this.
That's true. I do blame you. I will say though that you got up to 70 pounds in business, so it wasn't a problem. I brought everything I needed, and my plan was to just dump the weights in Portugal or wherever I'm going to be. So basically, end up leaving them in Europe, not bring them back. But long story short, the people at security were very suspicious of my ankle weights when laid out flat, just looked like little missiles or little, I don't know. They just look strange. So they were like, you know, they were inspecting them. Anyway, I need to get through this faster. So it was a lackluster journey to the gate. But once we were on board, Chandler, it was like we had stepped into a different world.
Really?
Okay, so you first get on, and the most immediate difference is, I mean, not everyone knows what the seats look like, so I'm not going to get that specific, but is just how nice the flight attendants are to you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so used to just, like, surly, exhausted flight attendants, like, basically throwing me death glares if I dare ask for anything beyond, like, my measly bag of pretzels. Business class is an entirely different experience. I don't know if these are like, if they have specific flight attendants for business, if this is like a different echelon of attendants, or if they just like, you know, these people, I don't know where they came from, but they are like flight attendants from heaven. They're so happy and like happy to help you. And like, they want you to have the best experience. And they're just like laughing and chatting. And it's just like all, it's just a pleasant atmosphere.
Wait, what's the difference between business and first?
So first, most airlines are getting rid of first and just having more business class seats because most people fly business. There really isn't a huge difference.
Okay. Like both, okay.
Both have lay down seats. Like first class has like bigger TV screens, but it's really, okay. And that's why actually I watched this whole YouTube about it, but that's why a lot of airlines are getting rid of the first class cabin and just putting in more business seats. Cause most of the time they fly the first class cabin, it's never even bought. They just give people free upgrades because most people just buy it for the lay down seat and that's it.
Right.
Okay. And or they just want the lay down seat and so they just choose business because the difference in price is so crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
And anyway, these flight attendants, they're decorous, they're kind, they're chipper, and they took pleasure and pride in making this experience wonderful. I also think they took a specific liking to me because I was not playing it cool whatsoever. Like first they come out, you get in your seat, they, you know, bring you a pillow, a blanket, your menu for food. And then they come out with a tray of champagne and orange juice in glass flutes.
Wow.
Which was just wonderful.
Wonderful.
Of course, I take both, which I don't think you're supposed to. I think you're just supposed to pick orange juice or champagne.
No. You take both.
Yeah, so I take both and I'm like, hell yeah, cheers to the flight attendant. I was like a 4-year-old at Disneyland, like for the first time, just wide eyes, joy at every detail, lapping it up.
What's Kagan doing at this point? Is he playing it cool or is he demanding better service?
No. He's playing it totally cool. Like this is just the way he rolls.
Right.
And he does say funny things to him. He's like, I just don't think I can ever go back. And I'm like, you probably can once it's $6,000.
Right.
So anyway, for the meals, they pull out like this tray and then they put like a white tablecloth over it and the dishes and the silverware, it's all porcelain. Like the dishes are porcelain. The silverware is actually silverware and nothing's disposable. Insane. I know. And I think
the flight attendants.
Well, I'll get to that.
Okay.
But I think the flight attendants literally thought like this was my first experience with cutlery. Like I was like marveling at the silverware and they're like, this woman has never seen a fork before. She's been eating with her hands for 31 years. Anyway, and the food is, it's better obviously than economy, but the warm food, it's very basically like it's barely better microwave food.
Right.
However, there is fresh bread and butter with salt, mm-hmm. and the bread is fresh and delicious. Mm-hmm. There's champagne. There are good desserts.
Yeah, okay.
And so I would say that overall, like, you have enough to be, to have a full belly and feel delighted.
Okay, good.
I mean, especially since the best parts of a meal for me is the cocktail and the bread and butter anyway.
Right. Are there great snacks? Like, can you ask for just like, you know, I always ask for 2 bags of whatever I'm eating because like I just, you know, I'm the bags that they give you in coach are just not big enough to satiate an adult person. Correct. So I just say, oh, I'll take 2 bags of Cheez-Its. Thank you. And I just say that from the get-go. Can you ask for like 8?
You can ask for whatever you want. And on the menu under like everything, it's like, give you this big menu. It's like beautiful and it's like Michelin. The menu was designed by this Michelin star restaurant, and underneath every like section, snacks, food, whatever, it's like, please do not hesitate to ask for like as much as you'd like, essentially.
Oh gosh,
I know,
it's like a buffet.
It's amazing
in the sky.
It's fabulous, and they're walking through the entire time with the like wine and champagne. So they're constantly refilling. You never have to ask. Mm-hmm. I definitely, like, I think the meal in business class is basically like this scene out of the Book of Mormon cartoon that's like, pour it all wine.
Right.
Like, I feel like I'm just like, I'm getting buzz. I'm getting cozy.
Just, like, sloshing everywhere. Like,
just like loving my experience, grinning ear to ear. Anyway, I will say that I ate, I drank, I smiled brightly at the flight attendants mm-hmm. each time they passed me. They basically patted me on the head each time they passed me, figuratively, with their eyes. Mm-hmm. And then after dinner, I kid you not, I went to sleep and I woke up and we had an hour left to Paris. And it was, you know, they're serving breakfast.
Wow.
And I got off the flight and it was like the flight was really like a 3-hour flight. Like right, yeah. A dinner experience, a sleeping experience.
And did you sleep okay? Like in the seat?
Mm-hmm. Slept totally fine.
Wow.
It was truly special. It's probably my last time ever, but it was truly special.
I'm so glad that you were able to have that experience and, you know, to lose your figurative business class virginity in that way. I'm glad your first time was really special.
Well, I guess this is the part where I'm going to flex a little. It wasn't my first time in business. It was my first time in business transatlantic.
Yeah, and you know, which is huge, you know?
Which is huge. Yeah, the business flight to Puerto Rico is nice, and there are the lay-down seats, but it's not the Air France LAX.
No, flying transatlantic is a completely different experience than just, like, you know, being upgraded for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, well, it's five hours.
Oh, she's still flexing.
Hours to Puerto Rico. She's still flexing. It's definitely a much better experience. But yes, this was different. Oh my gosh. I'm the worst kind of person.
Well, you know, it's okay. I'm happy for you. I don't see that anytime soon in my future because I have no status.
Really, though?
I mean, I just like – I mean, maybe if I fly, like, to Europe. But, like, there's no way I'm going to be flying business class just, you know – from Orange County to San Francisco or from Orange County to New York.
Yeah, 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 totally.
I don't have status. I want status on one of my – on, like, Delta, but I'm a ways away.
I don't think it's worth it unless there's the lay-flat seats, you know? And mm-hmm. it's, like, an hour where you'd want to sleep. Like,
right.
For me, I think where business and on domestic situation is clutch is when it's, like, a 5-hour flight and they have the lay-flat and it's a red-eye because then you can kind of, like, really maximize that.
I don't like being awake on flights. I prefer to take flights when I'm asleep for the majority of the time.
Exactly, exactly. So, anyway.
Jokes on you, everyone in business class during waking hours. Jokes
yeah,
on you.
On domestic flights. So nouveau riche, so dumb.
Seriously.
Anyway, so that was really fun. And then Portugal itself, it's just – I didn't know this, but I'm in Lisbon, so I can really only speak to Lisbon. Mm-hmm. But Lisbon is the oldest city in Europe.
Wow.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And it's very warm here. And it actually reminds me a lot of, like, Laguna Beach.
Okay.
Like, in terms of the weather, just, like, very mm-hmm. warm August, but cool nights.
Yeah.
So definitely cooler evenings than Puerto Rico. But it's just amazing. It's just fabulous. Like, I'm sorry. I'm just going to say all the things that everyone knows.
Do.
And I feel so cliche saying. But, like, the food is just better everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's so cheap. Mm-hmm. It's so fresh. Everything. Like, you can walk outside and walk, you know, a block. And there are 3 very cute cafes you can go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful. Like, people dress with a greater sense of style. I feel like the guys here are more stylish. The women are so like the women are so stylish at every age and they're also mm-hmm. so much more natural looking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think I've seen an ounce of filler since stepping on European shores.
Wow. Love to hear it.
Not there's anything wrong with that, but it's just interesting. Like, I was talking with one of the girls that I'm traveling with and mm-hmm. there is such a distinctness to the European style and sensibility.
In what way have you noticed?
Honestly, there's like an ease in their bodies. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if I'm at an American beach, like, there's a lot of muumuus happening. There's a lot of sarongs. There's a lot of, like,
covering up.
There's a lot of covering up. Like, the people here, like, it doesn't matter if they're 75, what size they are, what age they are. There's just, like, I don't even want to characterize that as a shamelessness. There's just a ease in their bodies that's really beautiful and just, like, it's very inspiring.
I love that. I think that's absolutely wonderful. I mean, I feel like when I was in France, I felt a similar way. Like, it was just like, and like, it's like older women in bikinis.
Exactly. In bikinis, you know, with no cute one is little trying bucket to hats. Dress
for their age at all.
Lots of gray hair, mm-hmm. like lots of gray hair and like older, like fit-ish bodies that are kind of just like very, just very at ease in their own skin. That's really that's like great. What it comes down to. Whether they are fit or not. Like, and what's cool is like, not what's cool, but it's just funny. Like everyone smokes. I don't smoke personally, but mm-hmm. literally everyone here smokes, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And there's just like a, it's just a different lifestyle. A je ne sais quoi. There's a girl that's from here that I met, and she was mm-hmm. talking about she really wants to move to LA. And I was I don't know. Like, LA, it's pretty rough. Like, compared to like the lifestyle here, I was like, it's really hard to get around, tons of traffic. But I was just like, you should definitely visit first before you make the plunge.
Yeah.
And she's like, yes, the quality of life is good. It is good here, but you know, and there's no oat milk in the cafes here. And that's very important to me. And that is actually like a big thing for like the quality of life for me is like having like the vegan cafes and like the having the oat milk in the coffee shops. And I was just like, yo, you Dude, have no clue.
enjoy paying $7.85 for an iced coffee with oat milk. Enjoy it, dog.
Well, the worst part too, or the thing about here is the apartments like are very inexpensive. Like, and Lisbon is a very inexpensive city to live in if you can work remotely and have like a foreign wage.
Oh, really?
Like, the wages are low here, so it's expensive if you're from here. But if you can just move here and work remote, like, yeah, you can get an apartment in the center of town for like 150 grand or 200 grand.
Wow.
Which it translates crazy. To like $1,000 a month in like a mortgage.
How are the beaches?
Or maybe like 1500, I don't know. The beaches, I actually haven't – oh, wait, no, that's not true. We went to one beach. It was really darling. You know, it's like this – there's like a castle basically on the beach, and there's like this little seaside town. We went to a town called – people are going to roll their eyes when I don't pronounce it correctly, but I think it's called Qashqai.
Okay.
And it's this really cute little seaside town. So the beaches are good. The water is cold. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely – It feels a lot like the Pacific.
Okay.
Ocean. So.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah.
What an experience.
I know. So, anyway, we probably will only be here for a couple more days, though. So.
And then where do you go after this?
That's the big question. I would like to go to Paris mm-hmm. for the weekend. We're moving to Porto on the middle of next week. So,
Where's
we're trying
Porto?
To figure out
what
we're
doing between
the now and then. No, it's actually – it's another town in Portugal.
Yeah. Okay. So you're just moving like locations. You're going to be in Portugal for this whole month.
We'll probably be in Porto until the 22nd and then mm-hmm. probably Greece thereafter.
Okay. And that's my birthday. So I just want you to mark that day as a special day, the day you're going to be celebrating me across the seas.
Oh, trust me. I have been prepping for your birthday. That's all I have to say. Oh, I have been prepping for your birthday, trying to figure out what we're going to do for you. So nothing's been decided on and nothing's been purchased.
What, you and your group of friends? Oh, I don't want anything. I would like to – the birthday anxiety is already set in for me mm-hmm. Because it's like it's my birthday, then it's Ben's birthday the following weekend. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to like do too much and then have us just feel exhausted by the thought of then celebrating again the following weekend. So, you know, it's not a milestone birthday by any means. I would like to, you know, just fully go off the grid. But since we've been traveling so much, I don't really want to, like, leave again. So, anyways, I don't really know what I'm going to do, but it'll be fine no matter what.
Oh, I'm really sorry. It sounds like this is going to be a really bad day for you. I'm just saying you should plan something. Plan something.
I am. I'm going to do – I have plans. I have like 4 different things I want to do. Some of them are solo. I'll actually just regale you with it right now. How about that? Okay. I would like to go get my aura photo taken. I took an aura photo with Ben. Have you seen those aura photos of me before?
No.
I recently got one with Ben when I first moved here, and it's actually really sweet. And I like have it. It's like this beautiful little photo of us, and there's like all these beautiful colors, and they actually represent – like usually my colors are like red and orange and purple. And I forget what those symbolize, but I think they're more like creativity and like, you know, passion and stuff like that, and they're very like career based. Are you about to say something rude?
This is all bullshit. This is
yeah,
all
it is. Bullshit. But it, no, I maybe it is, but I like it. I like this bullshit. Okay. I invite this bullshit with open arms into my life. So I've gotten those before solo, and then when I took my photo with Ben, the colors were like blue and green, and it was like about like harmony and peace and like healing, which I think is kind of sweet. Mm-hmm. And it's like a photo of us together. It's really lovely. You'll see it in the teasers. Anyways, I'm gonna go get one of those solo of me taken on my birthday. So I want to like do that by myself.
How do they capture your aura?
You put your hands like on, it's like a heat sensor thing. And then it like, you know, some voodoo happens and like it translates into some unique color algorithm, blah, blah, blah.
There's got to be like an aura filter on Instagram. You can just bypass this whole process.
Yeah, but I like how they're always different. And I have a friend who always gets like red. I'm actually just going to send you the one of Ben and I right now just because I want you to have it for yourself.
Oh, yeah. New screensaver.
You're going to want to hang on to it because it's really special and lovely.
For sure. Totally. I'm going to see if there's an Aaron's Brothers that I can frame it in Lisbon.
Absolutely. Okay. So I want to get that taken. And I just like, you know, I want to mark the day with my particular aura on that day. Then I think I'm going to do like a little tiny like lunch park situation with my friends. Mm-hmm. Then I think I'm going to go to Hudson Yards, which is like our like gym rooftop pool situation, and like lay out there and like have a nice time. And then I'm going to go to dinner with Ben. So it's very chill. Maybe I'll get my like, you know,
are you going to have a massage group with you at dinner or no. just a romantic dinner?
I mean, it's just going to be the two of us.
A couple.
Just, you know, a dinner with the two of us.
Okay. Well, I think that sounds like a good day. I think there's a 50% chance that day will be fun for you.
Thank you. Thank you for your faith in me. Well, I'm going to do something with friends earlier in the day. I think it's just like hard. I don't know. We could do
it. Is it a weekday?
It's on a Sunday.
You should make this a whole day a friend day. Unless you really want romantic time, you should try to keep as many people.
Why? To keep me from falling apart?
Yeah. To keep you from emotionally breaking down and freaking out.
I mean, I hope I'm not that emotionally fragile that day, but we'll see.
It's
I mean,
birthday. I also feel nothing's like off the table in terms of, you know, psychotic breaks. Just like,
I don't know. Maybe I can invite more friends to
dinner.
Can you
bring friends to Hudson Yards?
Maybe.
I think you should do a certain group of friends for lunch. I think you should do the aura photo if that makes you happy in the morning, a certain groups of friends for lunch, then do Hudson Yards plus a cocktail together alone. Mm-hmm. That way you have that romantic moment.
Okay.
And then do dinner with friends. I think you want the dinner to be boisterous and fun. And I think just the two of you, it's a lot of pressure on him to make it like an amazing birthday dinner.
That's true. Okay. I just need to figure out where to go. But yeah. Okay. I like those notes. Thank you for those notes.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anyways, so that's my birthday plan as of yet. I'll keep you posted on the meltdowns.
Okay. Yes. Please do. Okay, Chan. So I need to talk to you about something. Okay. I'm very, very, very. I mean, you tell me after I tell you what I want to do, but I want to start a new segment on the podcast. I'm not sure if it'll be weekly or monthly.
Okay.
But I want it to be about the current book I'm reading.
Okay. Yeah.
And what would you think we could call that segment?
Oh my gosh. Oh, I dare say, if it's not already taken by another podcaster, what Lauren's reading.
This is a joke because this used to be my Instagram handle for like 3 years when I was like 20. Was I would just post, it was pretty odious. I would just post pictures of books. Yeah, and all I posted were pictures of like quotes from books. Anyway, pretty pretentious, basically, pretty annoying.
The most annoying social media person that ever has existed.
Was me.
Or could ever exist.
Until like, 26 was me, yeah, for
I'm
sure.
I'm sorry, if you're posting like snapshots of a book, I don't think people are reading it and I don't think people want to see that on social media. Unless you never, ever, ever post it and like this is like means a lot coming from you. But I think if all you're doing is posting snapshots of a book, I don't think people are reading or caring. Is that rude to say? I'm not trying to be rude.
No, it's not rude to say. It's just reality. And unfortunately, I was completely not in tune with reality for a long time when it came to all things Instagram. And so Anyway, I used to be at What Lauren's Reading, which many people like to make fun of me for, and as they should. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's bring a little bit back, though. Let's bring that back to today, to 2021, What Lauren's Reading, because sometimes I am reading stuff and I want to share on the pod.
Sure.
Because it is genuinely interesting.
Yeah.
And what I'm also going to say is that it does fall under the umbrella of pop culture, because pop culture isn't just celebrity culture. It's popular culture. It's things going on
Definitely.
In popular culture. And books are part of, you know, media at large.
And might I add, I also am a voracious reader. I haven't made it my personality, like some people on this podcast.
Not anymore. But yes, I was guilty of that.
But yeah, I also love to read. So I would love to take part in this segment with you.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'm currently reading a book called Tea, The Story of Testosterone, the Hormone That Dominates and Divides Us. Mm. It's a new book. It came out. It's by Carol Hooven. She's the co-director of undergraduate studies at the Department of Human Evolutionary Biology at a college known as Harvard University.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ever heard of it?
No.
She has a PhD in biological anthropology from the same place, from Harvard, and lectures there about hormones and behavior.
Right. Okay.
So this is a credentialed woman, okay? This is not just – this person knows what they're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. As much as one could, I guess, you know. Well, do your own research on testosterone, okay?
That's
don't
true.
Don't listen to the scientists.
Trust but verify.
Right.
So the book dives into the differences between men and women and which of those differences is potentially caused by the hormone testosterone. And a bit of a disclaimer – before I fully dive into this. But when we talk about sex differences, we're talking about in general, like the people who fall in the middle of the bell curve, the average man and woman. Like, of course, we understand that there are men and women who fall on opposite ends of the bell curve and they're, you know, the extremes.
Yeah.
There's men who do not exhibit, you know, classical male features, who, you know, exhibit more feminine characteristics. Mm-hmm, I say that with air quotes. And the same thing for girls who are, you know, way more just like and she makes this exact comparison. If you think of it in terms of height, there are women who are 6'3" and there are men who are 5 feet tall, but most people fall in the middle and are neither. And when we're talking about sex differences, we're really talking about those averages, which are, you know, noted for the majority of people.
Right.
Yeah.
Great disclaimer.
So, anyway, so one of the interesting things about sex differences, and you know, when we're talking about these averages, is that they're noted cross-culturally. So regardless of what content you are, regardless of what continent you're on. So this is interesting. 95% of homicides and violent crimes are committed by men.
I'm sorry. That was a sharp left turn. I had no idea.
Sorry.
I thought you were going to like, I don't know, maybe, you know, we're going to wade in a little bit more. I was not expecting the word homicide. Okay. So,
I should have said that these differences are widely documented among every culture. So regardless of how disparate the culture is, you know, whether you're in Sydney or North Korea, the same
men are still going to kill you.
Men are still going to kill you every time and disappoint you every time, like our dad says.
Men will kill you every time.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because obviously environments vary so much.
Yeah.
But there's a consistent pattern of behavior across both sexes in childhood and adulthood. And that really shows that, you know, this is – a lot of those behaviors are biological. They're not nurture. They're nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A small note on this, though, and this is something that I find extremely interesting. She says – she talks about in the book about, like, this doesn't give men a free pass to just commit violent acts of crime and say that it's, you know, their nature, it's predestination, it's just what they were going to do.
Yeah.
Because – in cultures and societies where violent crimes are powerfully disincentivized with extreme laws and punishments, violent crime is very rare. So like in Singapore, they will literally cane you for like the smallest like offense.
Yeah.
And so she talks about how like in the places like that, violent crime dramatically plummets. So we can
calling
control
for
our order.
Stricter laws. You're calling for more caning?
That's it. That's exactly what I'm doing. I am just like, enjoy, and
I have no idea where you're going with this. I really was like gonna, I thought we were gonna maybe talk about relationships or something, but then it's just like we quickly went into homicide and like now we're at caning and I'm just like, I'm buckling in.
Well, that's the thing. That's a, okay, that's actually what I really wanted to get to, is that caning is critical for a peaceful society. And I'm so sick of people saying otherwise about caning.
This week on What Lauren's Reading, The Power of Caning.
When I see a police officer on the street, I want to see a cane in his hand. Otherwise, what's the fucking point? Might as well call the social worker.
Oh. Absolutely. Okay.
No, I'm not issuing any edicts on what is going to work when it comes to policing. But in Singapore, where they do cane, where they do cane, they've experienced a lot of success. And I'll leave that where it is. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
All right. So this is actually
seen a lot of success with cane. Sorry, it's just. Okay.
You know what? The stats are there, Chandler.
The stats are stats. It's data.
Just, it's data.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So this is just going to get weirder and weirder. Okay. You ready? So the study of testosterone actually has its roots, Chandler, in castration. Because.
Holy fuck. I'm so glad I didn't read your notes on this episode before, because there's just no proper way to prepare for this.
This is going to be a winding road of a synopsis.
It's been
okay?
Sharp left after sharp left.
Yeah. Well, let's just say ancient cultures, without knowing what testosterone was, mm-hmm. understood that if you cut off a man's testicles, profound changes. This is so horrible. Why are we laughing about like no, a serious, not- like dark medical procedure?
I just think it's like. I'm just having like a moment where I'm like, we are the pop apologists. And like, I'm hearing you say like, cut off a man's testicles. I love it. It's high, low, baby. It's high, low. Keep going. Keep it rolling.
Okay.
It's very sad. Castration is very sad.
Yeah. We are pro caning, not pro castration. Let's get that really clear. Okay.
Super clear.
Both C's, but not the same.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
They understood that if you did that, profound changes would occur in appearance and behavior.
Okay.
The same, you know, not, and these changes don't happen if you cut off a man's finger or part of his hair, you know? So,
yeah.
So basically they know, okay, there's something going on down there.
Very astute.
Yes. All of male secondary sex characteristics, large muscles, a deepened voice, facial and chest hair, a strong inclination to compete for female sexual partners, all of that, every single one can be avoided by castration before puberty. And ancient cultures knew this.
Yeah.
One of the most famous examples of castration in ancient cultures is the aptly named castrati, which are male European opera singers in the 18th century who had their testicles removed as kids in order to retain their high-pitched soprano voices.
Yes. Yes, I'm aware of this. Okay.
Yeah, so what's crazy is they would, you know, they wanted to keep men in the choir because women were not allowed to sing in churches. I don't even think they were allowed to go in.
You, Serena Joy, would agree with, right?
Just checking in. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Keep women out of the churches, keep them out of the libraries. I don't agree with that at all. Okay. My gosh. Just to be clear. So there's all these famous instances throughout history of really, you know, cultures understanding that testosterone or something that was happening down there. And when you removed the nether regions, part of them, profound changes occurred. Like, and
can we get graphic for a second? Like the balls or the penis?
Just the balls.
The testicles? Okay.
The testicles are what produce testosterone. They didn't know this, but they knew that if you removed them, that first of all, men, they never develop the facial or chest hair. Mm-hmm. They don't have the deepened voice. They actually, what's interesting is testosterone is what causes an initial growth spurt, but it's also what causes growth to stop.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah. So growth stops much more slowly if you don't have that testosterone. Okay. And so these men actually became taller than their peers.
Okay.
However, they had much more fat than their peers because they never gained that male musculature.
Yeah.
But they were taller. They had more fat. They had less muscle, smoother skin, and a full head of hair, because testosterone is what causes baldness, which is why a lot of times, like, you know, balder, I think it's like why I think bald guys are hot. It's like they do seem like high on the tee. Okay. And of course, they retained their angelic soprano voices, which was super powerful in conjunction with adult male lungs.
Yeah.
So another big example of famous castrated people in history. This is so, I'm so sorry, you guys. This is pretty intense.
This is just like, yeah, sharp left.
I was reading this and I was like, wow, this is crazy. I can't wait to talk about this on the podcast. And now it's like coming out of my mouth and I'm like, and then they removed, the testicles were cut off.
Are the most famous people in history who have been castrated. Exactly. On the Pop Apologist, brought to you by the Pop Apologist. Continue. I'd like to hear.
So another famous group are the I think they're pronounced eunuchs in ancient Greece and Rome and in ancient China. So I am going to read you a passage. Are you ready?
I love that you also are referring to that as a passage. Like a scripture.
Now, from the book of John.
Okay. Go on, Serena.
Okay. So Chinese dynasties relied on eunuchs to run many of the day-to-day operations of the government, to guard the virginity of the women who would bear heirs to the throne. The imperial harems. And to serve the imperial family. Because they had special access to high-ranking politicians and frequently had the ear of the rulers, the eunuchs possessed a great deal of knowledge about the inside workings of government. They were sources of gossip and advice and wielded significant political power. Why were eunuchs trusted with these duties while men who possessed testicles were not? George Stent, an Englishman who spent many years living in China in the late 19th century, gave us the first comprehensive account of Chinese eunuch life. There can be no other motive in using them, he wrote, than the suspicion, distrust, and jealousy of Eastern potentates and others, basically jealousy of their fidelity of the wives and concubines, and the dread that if men were employed who were not eunuchs, that licentiousness and profligacy would run riot in their harems. So it was a way of essentially having male servants who were not a sexual threat in any way.
Well, I've got two questions to ask you. One, should I start having Ben call me his imperial harem?
No, because that would mean you're more than one woman. A harem is like a harem of women.
I am every woman.
You contain multitudes?
I contain multitudes. Okay, so that's a no. Second, I think we should update the quote from Dad to say, uncastrated men will fail you every time.
Yes, that's correct. Uncastrated men will fail you every time. 100%.
Okay, I'm gleaning. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Okay, so what he says is the only men who would not pose a serious threat to the sexual and reproductive fidelity of the women in the imperial harem were those without testes, the sperm they produce, and a delivery system to transmit that sperm into a woman's body. And it didn't hurt that the lack of testosterone calmed or even eliminated sexual desire. The dynastic rulers needed strict reassurance that only their true biological descendants would be the royal heirs. The solution was to forbid outsiders with testes to come into contact with their precious virgins.
I mean, this doesn't sound like a half bad plan.
If my daughter comes home and says I'm dating a eunuch, I'm going to say, you know what? He can go in your bedroom. I don't care.
Totally. He's more than welcome to, you know, you can close the door even.
Yeah, for sure. Total freedom.
I love that. I love that.
Okay, so this is actually what's super fascinating about this is men would voluntarily suffer through the agony of castration and the chance of death that it brought because they were trying to escape poverty. So like even that harrowing journey and losing their masculinity in adulthood was worth it to get out of poverty and to just become like a royal servant.
Yeah.
So if you ever feel like applying for jobs on ZipRecruiter is a pain in the ass, just remember that at least you're not cutting off your balls and risking death for the ability to be someone's servant in a Chu dynasty.
Oh my gosh. Nothing like a good old caste system, maybe.
Yeah, honestly. Okay, and this is the other thing I wanted to read. It's just one paragraph. And it basically talks about how, like, the actual procedure itself, like, going through that was, like, it was, like, going through the eye of a needle, essentially.
It's not going to feel good to hear. Okay.
Okay, just listen to this. The patient is not allowed to drink anything for 3 days afterward, during which time he often suffers great agony, not only from thirst, but from intense pain and from the impossibility of relieving nature during that period. At the end of the three days, the bandage – I know – At the end of the 3 days, the bandage is taken off, The spigot is pulled out, and the sufferer obtains relief in the copious flow of urine, which spurts out like a fountain. Ugh,
why? This is a lot.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's just medicine. Grow up, Chandler. It's the human body.
Okay.
So, but this was interesting because basically they plug it up for 3 days and then they release it. And if there's a flow, they're in the clear. So this is what it says. If this takes place satisfactorily, the patient is considered out of danger and congratulated on it. But if the unfortunate wretch cannot make water, he is doomed to a death of agony, for the passages have become swollen and nothing can save him.
I'm so sorry. Why did what I share that hell? Today on the podcast? Why did you ever think this would be like great for our podcast?
I don't know. I thought your segment's canceled.
It is fascinating. It would be fascinating, like maybe as more of like a, you know, a 30-second segment, maybe 90 seconds tops. Like, oh my god. Wait, is there anything else?
Well, that's it for this week.
Oh my gosh.
We're only through page like 35 of like a 300 page book. So, okay.
I'm going to take this moment. Are you done? Can I recommend a book now?
I'm done.
Thank you for that, Lauren.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry to all the listeners. Please don't leave us yet. We promise to do better next week. I would like to, okay, well.
She's speechless.
I don't, for once. I'm trying to pivot because I have a great book to recommend. I don't think anyone's going to want to read this book after hearing your account. But okay. If you would like to read the book that I recently read while I was on the shores of Nantucket, if you liked East of Eden, it's a multi-generational story of different characters in this family. All the characters are really well thought out. It's also just like, discusses like, you know, Korea and Japan in the 19th century. And then the 20th century, and it's really lovely. It's called Pachinko.
Cool.
And everyone should read it if they don't want to read something about castration.
Yeah.
There's no castration in this book whatsoever. I can promise you that.
If you've got a hankering for some good old-fashioned talk of the tea and talk of castration, you can read Tea, The Story of Testosterone, The Hormone That Dominates and Divides Us by Carol Hooven. It just recently came out, you guys. So we'll see if people want more. If people want me to keep recapping this book, because the next segment that I wanted to discuss was about male and female differences in childhood, pre-puberty, mm-hmm. which is very interesting.
Yeah. I think castration was just like a really abrupt start.
I should have eased us in.
Honestly, anything would have felt like easier than that. But I now feel sick and I think I need to go.
Baptism by fire, baby.
Yeah. Well, until next time.
All right. It's been fun. Love you all. Very Thanks fun. For listening. And really quick, 30 seconds of thirst, please. If you like this podcast, if you want to stay alive, we're literally just asking you to please share it with a friend. Tell them they need to listen to Pop Apologists. Send them an exact episode that you really like. And be like, hey, listen to this episode. You'll love it. And tell them why. I think that's critical. Don't just recommend the pod. Send them an episode to listen to.
If you've got friends and you're like, hey, you got to listen to this episode about castration. It's wild. It's crazy. If you've ever been super curious about famous people who were castrated, here's the episode for you. Here's the podcast. It's called Pop Apologist.
100%. If you have any friends considering it, they can be fully informed and by listening to this podcast about making that medical choice to retain their soprano voice with adult male lungs.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Okay. Love, That's guys. Been fun. Thanks Love for you. Sticking with us.
Bye.
Bye.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at Pop Apologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.